When you listen to the Ron Van Dam Show, he probably seems like the kind of guy you'd like to sit down and have a beer with. Except he's chronically antisocial, and beer makes him gassy. So it's probably better to just keep admiring him from a distance. You're listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you very much.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Oh my God, thank you for all the applause. Please save your applause till the end of the program. Oh my God, thank you. I can't take it. Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Yes, it is. Yes, yes, it is. Relax. It's okay. Don't worry about it. No one has to know. It's just between you and me. Okay, so we can form a more personal, effective relationship, we're going to play a little game, okay? It's just you and me here, don't worry about it. I'm going to count to three. After I do, which is the way counting to three usually works, shout out a very embarrassing sexual situation that you were in, and you don't want to tell anybody about it, no matter what, until the day you die, and even then. Okay, an embarrassing sexual situation that you were in, that you caused, when I count to three. Okay, ready? One, two, and don't be embarrassed. It's okay. It's all right. You're talking to a virtual friend here, like a Facebook friend, someone you don't know. All right, you ready? Okay, reveal it. Reveal it and feel comfortable that you can reveal it to me. I'm going to count to three. Reveal a sexual secret about yourself that's rather embarrassing to you, but I won't find it embarrassing. Are you ready? One, two, three. Say it now. Are you serious? That happened? Oh my God. Ugh. You're disgusting. Are you kidding me? I can't, but you made that up. Wow. That is so awful. Ugh. I can't. Oh my God. I think I'm going to be sick. Oh no. And you find that sexually stimulating? How did you ever? Never mind. I should have never. Forget it. Forget I even did this. I forgot to tell you, get the kids out of the room. This is not a show for the little kids. I mean, it's not horrible. I'm not going to stand here and curse like I hit my finger with a hammer or anything. No, that's not going to happen. I'm just saying, I don't know what's going to happen during the next half hour as far as subject matter is concerned, and I don't know how much you helicopter your children. Are you helicopter parents? Do you own a helicopter? You do. Where do you keep it? Mm-hmm. In the helipad, in the helicopter garage. Now, if you're a helicopter parent, you probably don't want your kid listening to this show. So devise some type of an excuse to get them out of the room. I'll wait. I'll wait 10 seconds. But after that, I'm going to just do it. So go. Come on. Go do it now. Get them out of the room. Really, they disgust me. Get them out of here. Okay, great. All right. Whew, that was close, wasn't it? Well, how you doing? How you feeling? Everybody fine? Everybody good? You've been tested? You need to be tested before you listen to this program. I know you can't catch it this way, but can't be too careful. I have headsets on, so, you know, it goes directly into my ears. I have to be very, very careful. Fortunately, my two ears are socially distant. They're a good 6 feet apart. I have a very wide head. That's pretty much is what I'm talking about. Sometimes, I'm a very nice person, by the way. I am extraordinarily nice. People that know me personally, and that's not a lot of people, they think I'm really nice. You know, I'm gentle, wonderful. I mean, don't cross me. I'll mow you down. But in general, I'm very, very pleasing to hear and to be with. That being said, I do annoy people in certain ways, but I do it in a nice way. And I don't mean to be annoying. Here's what I do. I always figure it's okay to test a person and be annoying to them if it's in the course of their job. Do you understand? I would never just meet somebody and test them and annoy them. It would have to be in a business relationship. So here's what I do sometimes when I'm really bored, and I don't do it a lot, just every weekday. I'll go to a supermarket, and preferably a supermarket where the employees realize that they're working in a supermarket. You know what I'm talking about? Those people. I'll walk up to them as they're stocking the shelves. They have a lot of shelf stockers in some of these supermarkets. So I'll go up to one of them. I'll say, excuse me, which is so pleasant when I do that. Excuse me. Like I'm bothering them or something, although they're performing their job. But I say, excuse me, can you tell me where the devil's food cake mix would be? And I play a little game to see how quickly they can respond correctly. And you don't have to actually know where the devil's food cake is and what aisle, although it helps to know. It makes the game more fun. But even if you don't, you can tell by their response whether they know where it is or not. For example, I did this to a young lady. She was probably about 21 years old or something like that. And she was stocking the shelves near the cereal aisle. And I said to her, excuse me, do you know where the devil's food cake mix would be? And here's how she responded. Let's see, the devil's food cake, that would probably be near the flour and the sugar. That would so I'm gonna say aisle two. Okay, thank you. Obviously, she has no freaking idea where the cake mix is. Perhaps in her entire life of 21 years, no one ever asked her a question like that. But I put her to the test. And then I went to the aisle, and indeed, the cake box mix was there. So she wins, but not well, not well. Then I went up to a young lady who was stocking shelves somewhere in the soda section where the Coca-Cola and the 7-Up is, by the way. By the way, how many different flavors of Coca-Cola and variations can you have? Coca-Cola announced just last week that they're taking their popular Tab soda. Do you remember that? That goes back like decades and decades and decades and decades and decades and decades ago. Their diet soda was called Tab, and they're finally taking that crap off the market because guess what they came out with? Diet Coke. The hell's the difference between Diet Coke and Diet Tab? And now they've got like Coke Zero. Coke Zero. And Diet, what the hell's the difference? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Coke is just on steroids of coming up with too many things. Lower your standards there, Coke. Man, God, you got the market. Pepsi is not winning that market. Coke's got it. Stop over-trying so much. God, it's pathetic. It's embarrassing. So this girl's in the Coke aisle, doing Coke, I think. And I walked up to her, and I said, I'm looking for artichoke hearts in a can. And she immediately said, aisle five. Oh, my God, I want to have sex with you right now. The response was click of the fingers immediate. This is a girl that knows her aisles. And I didn't even have to go to aisle 5 or whatever the hell she said to check to see if she was right. Her response was so fast that she couldn't possibly be wrong. I felt like going up to the customer service desk, asking for the manager, and saying to the manager, "Oh my God, I just spoke to one of your employees," or spoke, whatever. And I think it said on her name badge, which was hovering just above her left tit, I believe it said Carol. Not sure if it was Carol or Carolyn. I didn't want to look too long in that area because that's not polite to do. I asked her where the artichoke hearts were in a can. Who does that? Who does something like that? Who even looks for artichoke hearts? Why would you? Her response, manager of the store, was so immediate. "I am here to tell you that she deserves a raise. She knows your foods in what aisles." I don't know if she was up all night studying for a test, a food aisle test or something. She's got it down pat. Now, I don't know if your name is Pat, but I'm telling you, she's got it down pat. I am so freaking impressed with Carol, Carolyn, whatever. She deserves to have her own store. Can you open up another location and make her the manager? Because who knows things like this? You know, here's the problem with playing this game. You can only ask once. If you start giving them a list of things, they get suspicious and they'll just turn around and ignore you. Yeah, I mean, if I said to her, like, "Okay, where are the artichoke hearts in a can, please? Aisle 5. And where is the crusty bread? Aisle 2. And where is the Campbell's soup? Aisle 7. You know, at that point, it becomes, like, ridiculous. Obviously, my point is to screw with her mind. So you can only do it once. You can only do it once. But when you get a response like that, it's so awesome. It's like, oh my God, here I am in America, and somebody actually knows their job really, really well. I know what you're saying about now. Seriously, Ron, half the show about this. Yes, because it's Americana. It's not America. It's Americana. I don't know what that word means either. I was watching Dr. Phil a couple of days ago. I can't watch him anymore. I can't watch him. He's got the Trump complex, I call it. Dr. Phil is never wrong. Sits there and touts himself continually about how everybody comes to him and only Dr. Phil can answer your questions and only Dr. Phil can make your life better. And don't question me. Don't question my staff. I mean, that's Trumpism all over the place. And I don't know if Phil is a Republican or a Democrat, but man, you got your ego and I'm never wrong kind of attitude, just like your friend in the White House. So I can't watch Dr. Phil anymore because he ain't my doctor, first of all. And secondly, the quality just annoys the hell out of me. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having confidence in what you do and knowing that what you do it well. But if you're going to tell everybody how well you do it day and night, I'm the best. Everybody comes to me. I'm never wrong. Shut your freaking mouth, man. That's like stupid. That's stupid. That's just stupid. Shut your mouth.
Shut up!
Yes, sir.
Shut up!
Thank you. Thank you. Anyway, Dr. Phil had a guest on the show, and his name was Coach Mike. Everybody on that show, they take their first names, and then they put their occupation in front of it like that's the first name. Dr. Phil. Okay, fine. Some of you don't even know his last name. It's McGraw, but most of you don't know that. Here's a generation gap question for you. Do you know who Quick Draw McGraw was? If you think it was a cowboy, you're wrong. It was a horse, a cartoon horse. If you didn't know that, I mean, we have other things in common, I'm sure, but obviously we're from like way different generations. It doesn't really matter. I'm just saying. So you got Dr. Phil and you got Coach Mike. Coach would be his first name, of course, with this Coach Mike. This Coach Mike was apparently not doing well and turned himself around and became a life coach. What kind of coach are you? Do you coach a football game? Do you coach youth soccer? Is it youth soccer that you coach? What do you coach? I coach life itself. What are you, Jesus? What the hell are you, Jesus? You coach life? What the hell response is that? By the way, where are the canned artichokes? So Coach Mike wrote a book called Be Your Best Self. I think that's the name of the book. And it's just, I don't like it. I don't like this soul-searching kind of crap. I mean, it's Be Your Best Self. It's so much, it doesn't make sense when you break it down. When you say it, it sounds very, very life coachy. But it's just odd. Like, hi, how are you? What's your name? Bob. Bob, are you being your best self? Excuse me? Shut up. How about that? Am I being my best self? Well, I don't even know how to respond to that. Well, Coach Mike wrote a book about that. And I guess the bottom line is try to be the best you can at everything that you do. Okay, this requires a book. I guess Coach Mike tells you how to do that in the book, which is stupid, because if you could do that, you wouldn't not be doing that. You know what I'm saying? If you were capable of being your best self, whatever the hell that means, if you were capable of doing it, then you'd probably be doing it. Problem is, you're not capable of doing that. That he doesn't address. Are you capable of... No, I'm not. Well, then why try? I don't understand. Be your best self. How about just respect other people and be nice to them? How about that? How about starting there, Coach Mike? I'm Radio Ron, by the way. Yeah. Yesterday I was walking down the street and I almost tripped over street bum Steven. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, first name is your occupation. Like President Trump. Ugh. Oh, I can't believe I said that. Somehow those words together just make it so nauseating. It's like eating like 3-month-old salami. It's, ugh, I can't, ugh, yucky doodle. All right. My guest is an author today. He's written a book, although it's not about being your best self. Again, whatever that means. Oh, yesterday, I went to a supermarket. I played my little game, you know. And then it went up to the cashier. Oh, it happened again. Now I'm being very vocal about it because it bothers me so much. You know, they check my items, you know, and they scan them and put them in the bag and give me the receipt. And I say thank you, which is what my parents told me to say when someone does something for you. So I said thank you because I'm a nice guy, as I said at the top of the program. And the response from this Generation W, I don't know what you call it, her response was, no problem. And I repeated under my, I said, God, no problem. And she heard me say that because I can't tolerate it anymore. I can't do it. She needs to be scolded with hot water, hot scolding water. Don't say no problem. Say you're welcome. You vapid little piece of teenager. No problem. What the hell? What the hell did that come from? Bothers me quite obviously. I'm trying to be my best self. So now I'm finding the need to actually correct people because I'm getting older in life and I think I've earned that certificate where I can correct people like a school teacher, you know? What are they going to do? Say, hey, you can't correct me. No, they don't. They just take it. Don't say no problem if someone says thank you to you. Say you're welcome and we're done and we're finished. The niceties have been passed on and we're done with our relationship. Thank you. You're welcome. Have a nice life. Get out of here. No problem. Oh, God. All right. My guest author is here. If I don't shut up, this will not happen. Let's speak to our guest. Owen Colfer joins us now. He is a New York Times best-selling author, and he's done it again in a with a series that is quite interesting. It's about the Fowl Twins. Tell me about them.
The Fowl Twins are, unfortunately for my sons, based on them. So I took the characteristics of my two boys, who are really different. And I think most parents will know this, that you can have two kids that have the same parents, the same house, the same upbringing, and yet they are diametrically opposites. And that's what my kids are like. So I use my two boys as the molds, and then I just exaggerated their characteristics out of all proportion. So one is wild and almost feral, and the other one is organized and, academic. And then I just shoveled in magic and adventure on top of that. So it's a good fun book. And if you are a kid or you have kids, you should enjoy it.
Now this is we were talking about the spinoff book. So this is. Been quite popular, I understand.
Yeah, the original series is called Artemis Fowl, and that's been going for about 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And I've been out of that world for a while. I decided it was time for me to grow up away from leprechauns and do something mature like dragons or time travel.
Well, of course, now, you have to.
Now I'm back to the magical creatures now, and I'm going to do a trilogy with the Fowl Twins. So this is book two, and I'm having a great time. I was hoping, of course, to be on tour and not just talking to you
via
satellite, but all tours, as we know, have been suspended indefinitely.
Yes. Well, the next book will be the tour.
That's what I'm hoping to forge all these strong relationships now, Ron, so I get invited back.
See, now
I can go on the proper tour.
So this is the virtual pre-tour to be followed by the actual tour. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, but I want you to know I'm given A material. I'm not holding anything.
No,
back,
I know that. So, I know that. That's what I've heard. What is the target age group for the series?
It's what's known as a crossover book. So the idea being that if anyone who can read it should enjoy it, but I think the core audience would be from 10 to 13, around that age. So if you have a really good reader on your hands, maybe 8 or even 9 or even 8 maybe, but I think 10 would possibly be the starting point, because there is a lot of adventure and there's a lot of explosions, and even though people don't really get hurt, it's still, I don't want to give anyone nightmares.
Of course not. You know, this is your target age group is very important, because it's when they should be starting to read on their own and get a fascination in reading and get a lot out of reading and be able to form the images in their heads that reading provides. So whatever they ingest at that age is significant usually.
It is absolutely significant, because it will form their habits possibly for the next 15 years, but probably even for the rest of their lives. And I know that the books I read when I was 10 to 15 and the music I listened to definitely stayed with me for the rest up to now. And I'm 55 now, so that's 40 years. I'm still listening to, you know, metal or glam rock from the 1970s,
well, that's what we do.
1980s.
Yeah, that's when we get older, we go back in time to a comfort zone, actually, and that's the time that you remember the good old days. You know, it's what happens. You know, your books and stories would be ripe for a motion picture.
Yeah, we've had two. The Artemis Fowl books were turned into a motion picture by Disney, and that's on Disney Plus at the moment. It just came out a few months ago. It's doing really well. And some years ago, the BBC made a TV show called Half Moon Investigations from one of my earlier books. Yeah. And I think there are currently three of my books in production or pre-production with One is with Amazon, I think. So there's with various companies. So, it's actually been a really good time for the transferal to the screen. It's very exciting.
Yeah. Well, what is it about the Irish folklore and heritage that lends itself so much to these mythical tales and these wonderments? What is it about that?
We have one of the oldest mythologies in the world, and I think because we're such a small island nation, the rest of the world to us was like a magical land. And of course, we didn't. Nobody understood science back then, so we filled all those gaps with imagination. So we have several cycles of mythologies that have then, since then, spread all over the world. We have things in common with the English mythologies, the Arthurian legend, for example, and the Beowulf legends. And these have been going for thousands of years, and they're such good legends that they have stood the test of time, and they've given us immortal characters such as the leprechauns, the banshee, the fairy folk who live under the world. And I've been able to build on those and modernize them, if you like. And it's been really, really a successful partnership for me and something that I love to do.
You know, it's funny, but people who don't live in your country, in Ireland, actually, they actually do believe that those things are possible there. Because of the strength of all the writings, they actually think that that's really true, and maybe it is true. They feel.
Well, sometimes when I'm lying in bed at night, and if it's a particularly stormy night, I half believe that myself, and it's very easy to believe, and especially when you're younger. That membrane in your mind between reality and fantasy is so thin that you can poke through it quite easily. And I think it's very comforting if you are an immigrant, maybe you're fourth, fifth generation Irish American. It's like you said, it's like a comfort blanket, the idea that your home country is somehow magical and these things happened. And there are people in Ireland who believe this. A lot of the elder generations, especially in the countryside, the farmers who will not mow down a fairy fort because they believe that would be bad luck. So it's not just, this is not just limited to people who live in the States. People who live here too completely believe it. And even those of us who claim not to believe it, we still wouldn't do anything to cross the fairy folk.
That's great. Of course, if you're a president, then you shouldn't believe it that much. But that's another story.
No, I don't think you should base policy. You should base policy on that. It's okay maybe to tell your grandkids, but right,
I wouldn't run a country on that. Based. No. Okay.
No.
Okay. How do people, can people follow you in your writings and what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit old for social media, but I do have an Instagram account, so you can, I occasionally put up an out of focus, out of center picture. I'm not the greatest, but you, if you want to follow what I'm doing, that will lead you to a very old fashioned thing called a website that you can look at, and that will show you what I'm doing, where I'm going. Okay. It used to be very active last year because I was all over the world, but this year it's all, I'm in my garden again, I'm in my office again.
Fine.
It's not as exciting. But if you're interested in my work, that's where to find me.
Yeah. I mean, enjoy it while you can. You know, when you do go out on tour, you're gonna want to get back to your garden and your home, I have a feeling.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every time.
Let me spell your name for those that may not be familiar if they want to do the Google thing. That's EOINCOLFER. And the formal name of the book?
The name of this book is The Foul Twins Deny All Charges.
The Foul Twins Deny All Charges. Look it up, you'll find it everywhere. And someday you may even see him on the tour. Hey, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. I've had a lot of fun and look forward to the next one.
Yeah. Thanks, Ron. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Owen. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it for today. You've been wonderful as usual. I do appreciate your patronage here. Thank you for shopping the Ron Van Dam Show. I'll be back again on the next time a weekday rolls around. You know when that's going to be. That'll be soon. Until then, I wish you peace. Did you have a good time today? Did you enjoy yourself? Did it give you a little breather from life? Well, I'm Coach Ron, and you're welcome. I mean, no problem.